Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Left-handedness is a curious phenomenon that science is, I know, still yet to work out. Why is it that most people in the world seem to be right-handed, close to 90% in fact, and only a very small minority, 9.5%, are left-handed? True ambidexterity, that is, people who can use both hands equally, is so rare, it's less than 1% of the population. That is, people who are truly ambidextrous. They can write as well with both hands, for example. The other curious thing is why left-handedness skews towards men. For every 4 women who are left-handed, we find 5 men who are left-handed. Why is this so? And the question as to why this happens has intrigued human beings for centuries. And the mythology around left-handedness has been vast. Is it a choice, a learned response? Is it biological? And if it's genetic, well, that's a kind of easy go-to, isn't it? But is it genetic? And if so, which gene determines it? And is there any biological advantage to being left-handed? Soccer players and tennis players in some boxes might think there is in some circumstances. I wonder what you think. Are there advantages to being left-handed when it comes to certain sports or activities? And what actually causes left-handedness? Is it something to do with one side of the brain being more dominant over the other? Or is there something more sinister at play? After all, the Latin word for left is sinister, isn't it? The derivation of it. What about other animals? Do animals show any signs of hand preference, or do they use both limbs equally? There have been countless hypotheses put forward over time as to why such a small minority of us are left-handed. Almost all of them are wrong. Let's unpack a few of them tonight. And with our continuing understanding of brain development and neuroplasticity, are we getting closer to the right answer? Joining us tonight is Chris McManus. He's Professor of Psychology and Medical Education at the University College London. He's also the author of a recently published review paper, Half a Century of Handedness Research, Myths and Truths and Fictions and Facts, Backwards but Mostly Forwards. His review looks back over the last 50 years of research on brain asymmetry. Chris, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
I could hear, be there.
Hello, Chris. Have we got you?
Hello. Can you hear me? I hope you can.
Oh, that came on. Let's just try again there. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Yeah, now I've got a microphone that works.
There we are. I thought you'd gone all left microphone on us there for a second. There is such symbolic power, isn't there, though, Chris, when it comes to right and left. The fascination over why some people are left-handed continues to stump scientists. Science, it's kind of steeped in all sorts of other beliefs that we have. There's so much mythology surrounding left-handedness, isn't there? It's steeped in devil worship and witchcraft and so on. How did that all start?
Yeah, I think in the end, most of it comes down to symbolism of some sort or another. And humans are very good at being symbolic. And so they give meanings to things based on which way round they are. And the classic symbolism, of course, is some things are good and some things are bad. And good and bad underlies almost everything we think about.
Yep.
But the moment you've got some other characteristic, which is just in 2 categories, like male or female or right or left, then we tend to assume that one of them is connected to good and one is connected to bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's happened with handedness is that the usual way that good connects to something is because it's done by the ones who are most frequent, the ones who are in power. And of course, there's more right-handers and they tend to run most of the world. And so therefore, people tend to assume good is right, and that only leaves one thing for left, which is to be bad. And so you get all this symbolism sort of tagged onto almost everything to do with handedness.
Is it just as simple as that human beings don't, in fact, celebrate difference as we know? They punish it.
I'm not sure they punish it, but I think what we're looking for the whole time is simple ways of coming up with answers to complicated problems. And if we can, you know, it's like we don't divide people, we don't measure the height of people. We say, are they tall or short? Now, people don't come in 2 sorts, tall or short, but it's a jolly quick, easy way to describe somebody. And so I think we use it as their shorthand, shortcuts for thinking and solving problems in general, but they're not necessarily scientifically true. So I think we've got to be careful of everything to do with right and left in that sense.
Mm. Yeah, we need to be careful about even describing it? I mean, well, apart from noting, as I did in the introduction, that the Latin word for left, by the way, is sinister. So just putting that to one side, left-handedness, of course, we've got to be careful here. It doesn't mean that you do everything with your left hand, does it?
It doesn't, far from it, in fact. And I think you have to realise that actually most things we do are bimanual. We use both hands. So a trick I do in the lab is you get somebody sitting down at a table, you put a piece of paper on the table, you give them a pencil and say, write on this piece of paper using just your right hand. And they can't do it, even if they're right-handed. The reason is that the piece of paper slides everywhere. You have to use your other hand, the left hand in this case, to hold the paper down. Then you maintain a stable base and then you can write. So even simple things like writing are actually use both hands. And most activities we carry out actually use both hands.
That's interesting, actually, because I'm just trying to think now when you write. Actually, you do deploy. I'm right-handed, but you do deploy your left hand in some way when you write.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean, you could write and make a cup of coffee with your left hand, but I think it would be very difficult.
Yeah, and you get the same with footedness, another asymmetry. You know, trying to kick a ball, well, the way you kick a ball with your right foot typically is to form a stable platform with your left foot. Now you've got a solid base, and then you can kick accurately with your right foot. Try and do it on ice and you haven't got a solid base and you're everywhere. So you need both feet to work together to do this complicated task.
In fact, it turns out that nearly a third of left-handed writers, for example, can throw more accurately with their right hand. And a tiny percentage of right-handed writers can actually throw a ball better with their left. So yes. it's more complicated than we think, isn't it?
And I think what's interesting is you tend to find that those people with the strange combinations, the unusual combinations, pop up in various sports, because it's in sport that where you're pushing people to the absolute limits of performance, that any slight difference in the way you do things can gain an advantage. And so, you know, in football and so on, they want the left footers. They really do, because you need them on the left wing and so on. And you find sport is very good at identifying where right and left sidedness matter a lot.
Mm-hmm. This also brings up the issue of preference versus skill. I mean, you might prefer engaging in a manual task with your left hand, but if tested, it might turn out that you're more skilled with your right hand. In other words, there's a thing going on called preference here, isn't it? What you'd rather do.
Yeah. I tend to think that actually it's preference that comes first.
Right.
So we prefer to do something, but then because we do it more often with that side, that hand, we then become more skilled at doing it. The more you do it, the better you are at it, and so on. And it's quite rare to find people just doing ordinary tasks where they're much more skilled with one hand but prefer to use the other. There may be some reason for it. But in general, the two go together. You do find situations, though, in some conditions where the two seem to separate out, which is why I think maybe preference comes first. But the two are separate.
Yeah, the handedness, it does seem to be, I mean, for true handedness, I mean, I'm like determinedly, I think, right-handed. And I have experimented with writing left-handed to see whether I could get better at it, but I don't seem to. In other words, it feels like a skill that I could not possibly learn.
Yeah.
So it's not just a matter of training, is it?
It's not, but I think it's also the nature of the task. What is it that we're particularly skilled at? I'm right-handed, as you can tell from the way I'm describing all this. But what is it that's particularly better for me with the right hand? And the answer in part is that I can make very tiny, very fast movements with the end of my arm. That's what writing is. We hold a pen and there's these incredibly rapid movements at the end of the arm. Mm-hmm. But It's being making small, rapid, fine movements, which is characteristic of handiness. If, for instance, you take a piece of chalk or a felt tip pen and you try and write on a whiteboard, which is enormous, you then find actually you can do it almost as well with your right hand as with your left hand. Do it on the beach. You know how you can write your name in the sand with the toe of your right foot. Try it with your left foot and you'll find it's not much different. Those are big, slow movements, and they're not much different between the two sides.
Oh, okay.
It's these really fine movements where the difference emerges, and writing characterizes those.
Yeah, interesting. The whole negativity about left-handedness, and the reason why there's a generation or generations of people listening to this who grew up being encouraged to get rid of their left-handedness was apparently due to a discredited educational psychologist back in 1937 who wrote that left-handers squint and stammer, shuffle and shamble, they flounder like seals out of water. All of this work turned out to be just totally discredited. But on the back of that, it was common for schools, wasn't it, to force students to switch to the correct hand. So people born as left-handers were culturally forced to become right-handers.
Yeah.
Was there always a cultural bias against left-handers, do you think?
I don't think always, no. But I think there was one that appeared in the 19th century. Because certainly in Europe, what happened in the 19th century was firstly, large factories started to open with huge machines in them, spinning jennies and those sort of things. And they were all built for right-handers. So it became very obvious that the left-handers couldn't use them very well. So they started to become they got a reputation for being clumsy. On top of that, at much the same time, universal education came in. So all children would go to school. And the one thing they'd learn when they went to school in, say, 1850 or whenever, would be to learn to write. But they'd start off using a chalk on a board or something like that. But then they'd learn to write with a pen. And think how you learn to write with a pen in the Victorian era. The answer was you'd get a steel pen, which was sharp, you dip it into an inkwell and you'd pull it across the paper. But try and do that as a left-hander. You can't push a steel pen across paper. It sticks in, the ink blobs everywhere. So they get another reputation for being clumsy and they can't do this important task.
But that's because, because fountain pen writing can't really be done easily if you're left-handed.
My standard line, by the way, is that the greatest invention of all time for left-handers was the biro pen, the ballpoint pen, because it actually goes in any direction. You never blot it. It's perfect. And that's when really people decided to say, well, they can write all right. We've been given a ridiculous tool to do it.
I suppose you can write in that left-handed, sort of slightly cack-handed way where you have your hand up above the page and you could probably use a fountain pen that way. But you're right. It's difficult. Yes.
Cack-handed is one of those interesting phrases, of course, which we won't go into.
I know, because it's a pejorative term for left-handed.
It is pejorative, yes. Yeah. But we call it the hooked writing hand position, where you wrap your arm, the left-hander wraps their arm around the top.
Yeah.
But it does mean they can pull the pen across the paper and they don't smudge the ink, which is still wet. So it was a very successful adaptation to the problem of writing with dip pens or fountain pens,
What about other animals? Is there any evidence that animals show a preference for left-handedness? One of my texters says all of the sulfur-crested cockatoos that land on my back balcony seem to be left-handed. Oh, sorry, left-clawed.
Left-footed or whatever.
Left-footed, I suppose.
I don't know, yeah. Okay, there's several things here. One is to differentiate between whether an individual animal is right or left-sided and whether the species is. So, for instance, if you take a mouse, then and you can test mice in the laboratory for their pawedness, exactly half of them, they all prefer to use one paw over the other for getting food out of something.
Okay.
So all of them have a paw preference, but exactly half of them prefer to use the right paw and half of them prefer to use the left paw. So there's what we call an individual preference, but not a population preference. And it's only humans who seem to have this real population preference where 90% of us are one way round. So that's the first thing. Cockatoos, I don't know about them in general, but parrots are quite interesting because parrots are claimed to be want to have one side. And I'm going to rely on your texter there to say which way round it is, because I can never remember. But they do tend to stand on one paw and pick claw and pick food up with the other and put it in their mouth. Yeah. That's a well-known asymmetry, but only in parrots, really, and those closely related species. Where that comes from, no idea.
Yes, my texter says all our visiting sulphur crested seem to be left-clawed.
Yeah, I think they're probably standing on the right foot and using the left claw to put the food in their mouth. I think that's probably what that means. But yeah, it's well known amongst certain sort of parrots in particular. Yeah.
Anyway, the animal world doesn't tell us much in that sense about
that. Well, I think what it tells us is that mostly we're unusual, actually. Yeah, I think that's the thing. You know, cats, dogs, all the animals you see around you tend to be a 50-50 mixture of right and left.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the baseline, if you like.
Now, let's talk about all the theories of handedness, because most of them seem to be rubbish.
We've got all night, haven't we,
that's
after
right.
all?
So. I mean, we'll talk about the big ones, because most of them seem to be rubbish. The whole left brain, right brain hypothesis, I don't know who invented this thing, but, gee, this is persistent, this idea of left brain, right brain, even though, as far as I'm aware, there's no evidence for it. There's no evidence that the left brain is more creative than the right, or that there are certain activities concentrated in the left brain that are not in the right brain. There just doesn't seem to be any evidence for this left brain, right brain divide, although people seem to be drawn to it. And look, it seems to be a debunked theory which will not die.
And I think there's a lot of those theories around in all sorts of areas. It feels attractive somehow, and therefore people like it. And then they'll find evidence to support it, but they don't look at it systematically. Science spends its time debunking things. I'm afraid that's why we get rather a raw reputation as being, we're not interested in things. All we do is to say everything's wrong and so on. But actually, a lot of ideas are wrong, and our job is to sort out the right ones from the wrong ones. The right brain, left brain came out in the late 1960s, early 70s. Mm. It was a product of the hippies, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
And, you could see how it had all sorts of interesting
hippies loved it. Hippies loved the idea.
Yeah,
that's right.
Absolutely. And they had all these fancy hallucinogenic diagrams showing it, bright colours and everything. But the fact is, there's simply no evidence for it. What we do think it's a metaphor. I think that's where it's good. We do think in two different ways. We think in terms of verbal language. So, I'm talking to you. The words we're using convey ideas. But we also think in terms of pictures and images and other things like that. And these are two different ways of thinking. But actually, we mostly use both of those methods all of the time. And there's no sense in which they're completely separated between the hemispheres. One hemisphere is better than the other at each of them, but that doesn't stop us using both for most tasks.
No.
And I think that's the mistake, to think, we're turning off half of that brain. We don't need it. Why bother to use it? And that would be a dumb idea, wouldn't it?
Mostly the evidence seems to be that when they actually, rather than deciding about left and right, that when they actually look at the brain to see which parts of the brain light up when we do certain things, there's no left or right divide. Even if they do seem to be on one side of the brain, it doesn't mean the other side can't do it. And often with issues of brain damage, the other side of the brain can easily take up these things.
Many things are in both sides of the brain. But for instance, I can tell you that I'm talking to you with the left half of my brain at the moment.
Mm.
I know this because I've had it scanned. And there's various ways of doing that. So most of my language is indeed coming from the left half of my brain. But having said that, when I stress words and I, might put, emphasis on things, or I get images associated with words, that's probably going on in the right half of the brain.
Mm.
So even language has both left and right half components, and we mix them up. In brain damage, you can separate these things out. But language to a large extent is in the left half of the brain. And that's why most people who have damage to the left half of their brain or many of them lose their language after a stroke. They become aphasic.
Mm.
So, you know, there are asymmetries there, but they're nothing like as clean and pure as the old right brain, left brain guys wanted it to be.
No.
If only it were that simple.
Talking with Chris McManus. Now, Chris is Professor of Psychology and Medical Education at UCL in London, the University College of London, and has had a good deep look at handedness and the theories in particular around handedness and what people think causes handedness. Most of these theories are in fact wrong. 1-300-800-222. Tim's from on the line from Laidley. G'day, Tim.
Hi, how are you going?
Not bad.
I've got some interesting observations. I'm ambidextrous myself, and I've been a martial arts and athletics coach for a long, long time. So I use both sides of my body to teach all sorts of things, including throws and running and all those kinds of techniques. But when I was, when my children were growing up, my second daughter had a fairly serious injury on her right hand. And I believe that she was probably going to be right-handed about that time, but then she switched to left hand because, of course, she couldn't use her right arm. And interestingly enough, I adopted one of my nephews a little later on, and he had a similar kind of injury, and I think he also switched. And I think that was learned behavior rather than something that was already innate.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Comment, Chris? Well, we touched on this a little earlier, didn't we? You know, can you learn to write with either hand?
I think people can learn to do anything if they put enough practice into it, is the simple answer. So, for instance, you know, think about playing on a piano. The first time you see a piano, you reach out and you play it with the fingers of your dominant hand, your right hand in your case. But once, after a while, you realize you need to use both hands. And after another 20 years of practice and you become a concert pianist, you can both use both hands equally well for doing everything. So clearly lots of practice will make both hands become equal. You can get this in some sports as well. So it is possible to do it, but it involves a lot of work, I think, is the simple answer. And clearly in sport, there is a benefit to being able to do both sides equally well. And I could see in the martial arts, it'd be useless if you could only do things on your right and, you know, your opponents would rapidly learn to come to you from the left. So clearly, you know, there are strategic advantages here to being equal on both sides.
Okay.
And so I think that's a very good strategy in something like the martial arts. The injuries, well, I think it can happen. Without going into all the details, and I don't think we should go into them, you know, how old, at what age, what sort of injury, and so on. But yeah, if you injure one side badly for a long while, then of course you will rapidly learn to use the other one. And one of the most famous examples in history is Lord Nelson, the victor at the Battle of Trafalgar, where he, at the Battle of the Nile, he had his right arm shot off. And within 6 months, he was writing letters fluently with his left hand because he said, I have to be able to write. So, you know, there was a terrible injury and a lot of motivation. Mm. And so he rapidly learned to do it with the left hand. So I think we have to take these cases apart in detail individually.
Yeah. Tony from Borkham Hills. G'day, Tony.
G'day, Philip. How are you?
Not bad. You're going to advance another common view about handedness. Go on.
Well, I've been fascinated for some time by left-handeds.
Mm.
And I think they've got an overrepresentation in achievement, either in leadership or the particular fields compared to the proportion in the general population. and historically, there's been Napoleon, Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Aristotle, Joan of Arc, Caesar.
Still on the other side of the equation, we could presumably produce a list of others who were not, Tony. That's...
Yeah, but and it tends to run in royals as well. I mean, Queen Victoria, Queen Elizabeth II, Charles, William.
Let's put it to Chris. So, Chris, is this a common enough view that left-handed people are, you know, more creative and more achieving? Is there any evidence for this?
There's a lot of There's some evidence and quite a lot of myths floating around. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say. as far as in decent scientific data, the two things where I find there is an excess of left-handers is firstly in mathematicians, and secondly in musicians.
No.
And the latter is quite interesting because, of course, a lot of musical instruments are actually designed to be played by right-handers. But even if you go to an orchestra, even though they're all playing the violin the same way round, many of them are left-handed.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think there's no doubt about those two. The rest, I think, are much dodgier. People love to find patterns in things which aren't necessarily there. If you go on the internet, you'll find great lists of famous left-handers.
Yes.
There are websites devoted to it. The one I always love is Beethoven, who's said to be left-handed. And in fact, he's in several books. I've got one book where there's a picture of Beethoven writing with his left hand. But if you look at what he's writing carefully, you'll see they flip the image over to make him look as if he's left-handed. And so there's a lot of people who would like people to be left-handed. Leadership, that story mostly goes back to American presidents, doesn't it? After they had a run of about three presidents who were left-handed. Whether that's statistically significant, I'm not sure, but it certainly stood out and it brought the whole issue to the fore.
That's right. It gets back to this idea of scientific theories which get currency because they're inherently attractive rather than whether or not they might be true. There was a lovely study published, which was published in Nature, which is a very prestigious international journal, which asserted that left-handed people died on average 7 years before right-handed people. And this was based on data contained in an encyclopedia of baseball, which you might have thought was it's a data set, I guess. But anyway, because you knew from the encyclopedia of baseball whether people batted left or right-handed, and therefore you could just do a simple thing on the dates of death. So, but because this theory is sort of, well, sensational and unsettling and kind of therefore has a tabloid appeal, the it gets some currency, and that's part of the problem with a lot of these so-called studies, isn't it?
I think that one is a really interesting case, actually, because you're right, Nature published it, but it was never reviewed in Nature. And as I always say, if you look at the statistics, the mean and the standard deviation of age at death in the right and the left-handers, you'll find that even a first-year undergraduate could show there's no statistical significance, no difference between the two. So why Nature published it is a very interesting question. But remember, most people can't understand a word of most of the articles written in Nature. Nature needs to get some sense of being out there with things that people can understand. And so I think they put this out because they wanted to get attention. And most people don't understand most of the stuff they publish.
Mm.
Can I emphasize here, though, there is not a ha'porth of evidence anywhere that left-handers die earlier.
No.
All of the big studies disconfirm it. And there's one really large study in Britain, a thing called the UK Biobank. It's got 500,000 adults in it. They were aged over 45 when they came into the study. A few years ago, they analysed, and already 5,000 of them have died. They broke it down by right and left-handed. They had exactly the same lifespan. There was no sign at all. So this one, it's like, you know, people die, but myths never do. And this myth is immortal, as far as I can tell. And I just always come in touch with it. Yeah.
Other hypotheses which have had some currency. It's to do with ultrasound scanning during pregnancy. Well, you think that can't really be right because, after all, there's been left-handers long before ultrasounds. But there was a review which found that had nothing. There's no link at all.
Enough said on that one. Yes. Absolutely correct.
Birth complications and other claims that left-handedness is only decided at or following birth. What's the answer here?
Well, certainly in the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of theory going around that brain damage of some sort could occur during birth. And, you know, I'm a doctor by training, and one of the most dangerous periods of our lives is that 20 minutes it while you're being forced through the birth canal.
Yeah.
It does all sorts of potentially terrible things. Babies get damaged very easily. Their brains are very soft and malleable. They're squeezed as they go through the mother's pelvis. And therefore, there's a real possibility that there's damage to the brain. And indeed, there are babies who have terrible injuries due to all sorts of complications. So there's no doubt that brain damage can result from complications during birth. The question is whether that accounts for most people being the majority of left-handers being left-handed. And the simple answer is no, it doesn't, for two reasons. One, when we look at babies before birth, then we can tell if they're right or left-handed. And that really came about in the 90s with the development of ultrasound. And most pregnant women were having the fetus scanned using ultrasound. And it was rapidly realized that you could see these fetuses moving in the mother's womb. They were behaving. And one of the behaviors that really stood out, actually, was that many of them were sucking their thumb. And then it became obvious that, of course, you can tell which thumb it is they're sucking. And 90% of them are sucking their right thumb. So most babies are right-handed before birth. But of course, that doesn't mean that you couldn't then get some additional brain damage occurring, which then disrupts that process. And I think the best estimate I've ever seen is for Dorothy Bishop, and she reckoned that perhaps one in 50 left-handers might have suffered some brain damage during birth. The vast majority of brain damage at birth, left-handers are not due to that at all. Mm. But it's not an impossibility, and I think we have to accept that. Okay. In medicine, almost anything can go wrong. It's a horrible truth, but doctors have learned it long ago. So I think there is some tiny story there. The big story is utterly wrong.
Okay, so now there's the other one that studies published over the years have seemingly shown that more left-handed people than expected are diagnosed with a large number of diseases, from autoimmune conditions to psychiatric disorders. In other words, left-handed people get sick more often. Turns out actually not true, doesn't it?
Well, I spent a horrible decade trying to take apart the theory underneath this, and we wasted a lot of time over it. A man called Geschwin developed it, and he was a serious scientist, and he was good.
Hmm.
But he got hold of some data from a shop in Glasgow called the Left-Hander Shop, and they gave out a questionnaire to people coming into the shop and saying, are you right or left-handed? Most of them were left-handed, but some were right-handed. And they said, do you suffer from any of the following diseases, including autoimmune disorders? And then they found more of the left-handers said they were suffering from autoimmune disorders than the right-handers. And they published this in a very distinguished journal once more. And it got published. It became a story. The long ending of that years later is that there's no hint of that being a true effect. But I think what does happen is much more interesting. If anybody has anything which distinguishes them from other people and something happens to them and goes wrong in their life, then they often use that as an explanation for what went wrong. And I think that's a very human characteristic. We see they suffer from this, and B, they've got something else. Well, the two must be linked, mustn't they?
Yes.
But they're not. And it's a very human characteristic, I'm afraid. Psychologists are well used to that one as well. They're, as far as I can tell, left-handers aren't specifically diseases.
What's the scientific term? Coincidence is not causation, isn't it?
Yeah, correlation is not causation. In this case, there isn't even correlation because they're finding it in individual cases. So, you know, somebody says I'm left-handed and I've got, you know, Bloggs's disease or something. Therefore, it must be because I'm left-handed that I've got Bloggs's disease.
Which offends against the basic logic of the syllogism too, doesn't it?
We won't go down that road, but you're right.
Oh, dear. 1-300-800-222. What a fascinating conversation. Chris McManus is with us. He's Professor of Psychology and Medical Education and a doctor by training at the University College London, and has had a deep dive into handedness and the many, many myths which surround it. Colin from Maitland. Hi, Colin. Hello, Colin.
Yeah, g'day. How are you?
Not too bad.
That's good. I've actually got lots of comments on this.
Mm.
On the proof, I once had a girlfriend who had epilepsy. And so I used to read articles about it and all that sort of thing. And there was a study that was done where some epileptics were cured by having their brain, the left and right, separated. And if you blindfolded them and put a cube in one hand and asked them to feel for the same shape in the other, they couldn't do it, which sort of demonstrates that one side of your brain controls one hand and the other side of your brain controls the other. So I don't know how that fits in with what Chris is saying, that there's very little evidence of it.
Mm. Is that actually right, Chris? I'm not sure.
First of all, we have no doubt that, you know, my right hand is controlled by the left half of my brain and my left hand by the right half of my brain. Mm-hmm. Even the ancient Egyptians sort of knew that. They'd worked it out from looking at nasty wounds on battlefields. And so there's no doubt about that. The epilepsy story is more complicated because there were people within the 60s, 70s, 80s, maybe still to some extent, who had terrible epilepsy. And it was a special sort of epilepsy that would start in one half of the brain and then slowly spread across that half of the brain through this giant bundle of fibers, the corpus callosum, and into the other side of the brain. And at that point, they'd have a generalized convulsion and fall to the floor in the usual epileptic fit. And what some of the neurosurgeons tried doing to stop them having so many generalized fits was to cut the corpus callosum. And then the fit would start in one hemisphere, but it couldn't get to the other one. So they could carry on doing things and so on. Unfortunately, it's the law of unintended consequences. It was only then that they realized lots of other things which were potentially problematic for them. And the thing you're describing, you know, where you put something in one hand, normally if I pick up a cube with one hand, my brain, if I put it in my right hand, my left brain can understand that, but it then tells the other side of my brain it's a cube, it's in the right hand, and then the left hand knows it as well. And say, yes, that's the same or that's different. They can't do that. And so they do have problems, and they're fascinating. They're very rare individuals, unsurprisingly. I'm not sure what current thinking is, but it's extremely rare surgery nowadays. But it does show some of the complications of having a brain with two halves, and they're only not properly connected much of the time, which is a strange situation when you think about it.
Adrian, hello.
Oh, good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well.
I just wanted to make a comment on why it's always better to be left-handed, and Chris mentioned aphasia. I'm the youngest of nine kids. Three of us are left-handed. I had a stroke almost 16 years ago that would have affected my speech. Mm-hmm. I would have been severely expressively aphasic, so the way words come out would have been difficult for me, but only in left-handers. So only in a small percentage of the population, only in a small percentage of left-handers does your expressive language swap to the other side of your brain. So if I wasn't left-handed, I wouldn't be talking to you like this, because I couldn't talk to you like this.
Certainly nothing wrong with your speech at the moment, Adrian.
No, as I lie in bed and think, what a great conversation about left-handers.
Thanks for that. Chris?
Adrian's absolutely right. We haven't really talked about what the advantages of being left-handed might be, because most right-handers are what I call the off-the-peg version of the brain. Mm-hmm. So you get some things in the left hemisphere, some in the right hemisphere. And if you get a stroke and you knock out something, then, as Adrian says, you can become aphasic or whatever. Left-handers are much more variable in the way their brain's organized. And in fact, I've just written a long paper where we talk about what we call cerebral polymorphisms. The brains of left-handers are more polymorphic, they're more varied than the brains of right-handers. And that may be one of the advantages that comes with being left-handed. And certainly, as Adrian correctly says, left-handers are less likely to suffer aphasia after brain damage than our right-handers.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Okay.
Now, in the limited time we have left, this has been such a fascinating conversation. Okay, we've debunked a lot of theories. In fact, most theories seem to be wrong. So it gets back to this, the giant catch-all, which everyone goes to these days. Oh, well, it must be genetic then. the trouble is it's complicated when you start saying things like that because we don't understand the human. Well, we've mapped the human genome, but then again, identifying all the individual genes on that genome is quite tricky, isn't it? So where do we sit at the moment with is it genetic is the explanation?
Okay. I think if we went back 20, 30, 40 years, most people would have said, yes, it is genetic in part. They wouldn't have said it's entirely genetic, but it's genetic in part because it runs in families and because identical twins are somewhat more likely to be similar in their handedness than non-identical twins. So those are the usual things that make one think something is genetic. And people assume there was a gene for left-handedness. And I've certainly published a lot of stuff long ago, which said that's probably exactly what's happening. Things change, though, and the Human Genome Project and then giant databases, that certainly by 20 years ago, at the beginning of this millennium, people were beginning to look through huge databases of genes, trying to find whether there was a gene. The simple answer for most things, actually, is there's never a gene. They're vanishingly rare, those conditions.
Right.
Mostly, most conditions are what are called polygenic. And about 2 years ago, a paper came out where they'd gone through 1.75 million people looking at their genes, trying to distinguish the left-handers from the right-handers. And they found, they didn't find a gene, they found 42 genes.
Oh, dear.
But okay. That didn't surprise anybody at that point, because if you look for high blood pressure or you look for high cholesterol or even for blue eyes, you find all of those have multiple genes affecting them.
So there's not a gene.
So there's no doubt that there's not a gene. No, that was always too simplistic. Having said that, it often acts as if it's one gene. And you can do calculations predicting things, just as blue-eyedness runs in families, just as if it were one gene. But there's 50, 60, 70 genes determining eye colour, it transpires. So I think there is a genetic thing there. The other thing to say is, well, if it's not, is genes the only thing? Because if genes weren't important, what else could it be due to? And that actually leaves the environment in biology. And people have gone through pretty carefully looking for environmental factors that determine whether people are right or left-handed. And I don't mean things like, you know, did your teacher beat you at school to make you write with the right hand? I mean, you know, other aspects of the environment, developmental things. And almost none of them come out. And the only one, and the one that's most fascinating at the moment, and I don't know what the explanation is at all, is that left-handers are somewhat more likely to have been bottle-fed than breastfed. Now, that seems an unlikely thing, except there are now five very, very large studies.
Yes.
I reviewed the first paper which found it, and I was sceptical, but it had 17,000 people in it. And there's four more studies. You put them all together, it's pretty the statistics are indisputable. The explanation is completely non-existent. We've got no idea why that may be.
It may be pure coincidence, mightn't it?
I don't know. In that case, if you believe that, you should be doing the lottery more often.
Okay.
my usual reply. I don't know what it's due to. The effect is utterly real, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
Unless somebody can prove a defect. But that's the only thing I'm solidly convinced by, that the environment affects in relation to handedness. But other than that, it's mostly genes. And I think genes have to be part of the story, but they're not. We aren't at the stage, for instance, where we can look at somebody's genes, you know, and we can go to 23andMe or something and look at the entire sequence of genes and predict whether they'll be right or left-handed. That's just far, far away in the future.
Okay.
So there's something going on there. The science is interesting. Quite what? I'm not sure.
It's like a lot of explanations, that's right, when we say, oh, it's genetic. It's, well, yeah, what does that mean?
And each explanation raises more questions.
Raises more questions.
Further explanations, yes.
Mark's got another theory, which has been popular in this country. It may also be in yours, Chris. Mark, hello.
Hello.
Yep.
Really interesting talk, gentlemen.
Thank you. You went to a Catholic school.
Yes, I had the, they called my left handedness the hand of the devil, and he used to crack me on the hand, and then I started to be right handed. Then someone gave me, and I had a speech problem for decades, which I've managed to manage at the moment. But in the King's Speech book, which they made the movie from, there was a story in the book that when you had your dominant hand changed, it could contribute to speech problems. I wonder if there is there, would the professor know or heard of that before?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Chris?
It's certainly a common theory. It, like a lot of these things, it floats around. People with speech problems, stuttering, stammering, and so on, are somewhat more likely to be left-handed, it must be said. It's not a very strong effect, but it is there. And that may reflect the fact that their brain is organized slightly differently, as I was mentioning earlier. Whether it's the changing handedness which is the cause, I think, is a very separate matter. It doesn't surprise me that having a hand changed is very stressful. It would make any child careful about everything they do, worried about everything they do. And it therefore doesn't surprise me if in that case they may be, they may stutter or stammer. But I'm not sure it's a direct cause of it. I suspect it's the stress associated with it, which is the cause. And I suppose if I really believe that, I'd say, well, what other things are there that we do to some children which make them anxious and worried and so on? And I suspect some of those are associated with being stutter.
Interesting. Okay, thanks, Mark. 1-300-800-222. One of my texters says, could you please ask your speaker if there's any link between dyslexia and left-handedness?
That one I can give you a definite answer to, because there was what we call a meta-analysis, where there have been a few studies floating around for a while suggesting that dyslexia was related to left-handedness. Since then, there must have been 30, 40, 50 studies in the literature. You put them all together, and there does seem to be a small excess of dyslexia in left-handers. I have to say at this point, this does not mean that most people who are left-handed have any evidence of dyslexia. These are statistical associations, so don't get me wrong.
Yeah, okay.
But amongst people with dyslexia, there are somewhat more of them who are left-handed, but it's not very large.
Yeah.
But the scientists, of course, get interested in that. They say, well, what's going on here? There are big studies looking for genes for dyslexia, of course. That's another condition that's often thought to have genetics involved. So it may be that the same genes for handedness and dyslexia
are somehow,
will start to come together.
Somewhere mixed up, yeah.
Too early to say that.
Joshua said, makes an interesting point. He says, I'm learning to write in Arabic. Arabic is written right to left, and I intend to use my left hand. But hang on, if most people are right-handed, why was Arabic developed as a right-to-left script? I suppose with a right-handed person, that would be okay too, wouldn't it? Although it'd be easier with your left, wouldn't it?
Yeah. A number of years ago, I published a book on handedness called Right Hand, Left Hand. And in that, I went into all the scripts of the world, and there's a huge chart looking at when the scripts were first seen and whether they go from right to left or left to right. And it's interesting how many scripts used to go from right to left. We assume that left to right is the natural way of doing it, but there's plenty like Arabic. Some have actually changed over the years. And I don't think there's any natural way of doing it, actually. I think it's a bit like you ask which side of the road you drive on. Everybody in Britain and Australia assumes it's natural to drive on the left, and everybody in America assumes it's natural to drive on the right. Neither of them is natural, as far as I can tell, and half the world almost drives on one side and half on the other. So I think the script direction is something. Essentially, what happened was one person started to produce the script. They did it one way rather than the other, and that could have been just chance. But unsurprisingly, other people then copied them, because there'd be no point in doing it a different way to everybody else. So it gets built up and it becomes a habit and a cultural feature of that language and that script and that country. And then everybody does it. You wouldn't want to do it the other way around. And so I think these things become fixed, if you like, because that's the way people started to do it and carried on doing it. I'm not sure there's more to it than that. Or well, actually, that's quite a big something for it to be due to.
Oh, dear. Kim says, are you and the professor aware there's no such thing as a left-handed field hockey stick? Flat on the front side, rounded on the back side. So, oh, dear. There are so many of these great examples. Well, time has beaten us. Chris, it's been a fascinating conversation. I cannot thank you enough for your time. It's been terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It's good to hear all your correspondence as well.
Chris McManus is Professor of Psychology and Medical Education at the University College of London and an expert on handedness around the world.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.